Love Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. My pleasure to be with you. Barely made the start of the show tonight, as those on the switchboard know. Hello, Kirk. Hi, James. How are you?
How are you doing?
Yeah, getting a little nervous there for a second.
I have a wonderful excuse. I was spending time hugging my granddaughter. And
I can't blame you that one.
You know, she constantly holds her little hand up in the air for me to put down a finger so she can take me where she wants me to go. And she's constantly saying, you know, Papa, Papa. And she was doing that to the point where the idea of walking away from her was beyond my
beyond your
capacity. Yes, because this little girl has me wrapped around her finger. I mean, if I've ever been owned and operated by a person, this little girl, I will do anything for her, and she knows it.
It's amazing how a little girl can do that to you.
Oh, my. Yeah, I had two sons, so this is a new experience for me to be a grandpa to a little girl. And clearly, sons are wonderful. I've thoroughly enjoyed raising our two boys. Got to do a lot of great stuff, sports and exploring and you name it, camping out. There is something really sweet about a little girl.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's what I was doing and loved every minute of it. I sent you guys a copy of where we are thus far in Yashaya, which is the 17th chapter, which is jumping ahead a fair amount from where we were in Yashaya, the 5th chapter, which we just completed last week. In the 5th chapter, Yahweh specifically talks about lifting up a banner in conjunction with Dode, and it, you know, it's really spectacular reference as it relates to what we're doing. Really, I don't think there's anyone that even remotely qualifies in terms of fitting what God specifically described. And since we are figuring out what Yahweh revealed and conveying it to all who are willing to listen, we shouldn't really be surprised that he would call attention to what we're doing. And not by name, because that's irrelevant. We're doing everything we possibly can to stay as anonymous as possible, but by the fact that this is an ensign, it's a banner, it's a signal to the world to look at what Yahweh has to say. So not surprised by that in the least. What I do want to do, and start with you guys, is to jump ahead just a little bit, and we'll return to where we have been, both in the 10th chapter of observations, where we're continuing to absolutely derail the myth of of the Christian New Testament being inspired by God or being inerrant. And then we will return to, we'll jump into the 11th chapter of observations on this program going forward. But I really came across some stuff that was surprising. And we covered a little bit of it in observations, but I think it's worth going through tonight because it is, Kirk, unexpected, I think would be the best way to put it. Did you expect that there would be any chance that the single most quoted line from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, which is Yeshayahu 9:6, unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given?
No.
Did you think that the context of that would be?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Would be anyone
wasn't looking for that one? No.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely was not looking for that one. That the person being referred to is Dode.
Yeah.
You know, everyone thinks it's the Christian Jesus who came as a little baby and, you know, God was born in a manger. And, you know, that he was the Son of God, born of a virgin, which means that God was his father. And that's the interpretation.
It's ironic considering the fact people have accused you and us of, you know, putting Dode above Yahusha.
Well, Yahweh apparently has.
Yahweh certainly did.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't obvious who he's talking about, then why would he, in the same sentence, because it's really a run-on sentence about a child is born, a son is given, why is there only one name in that run-on sentence? And why is the name Dode? And why does it say that, you know, he is going to be the one that provides us the insights to be empowered and enriched and to engage and endure with God? He's the one that provides the insight for us to exercise good judgment and to resolve the difference between us and God, and that his seat of honor and his kingdom is going to endure forever?
Well, if you think this moment, it would have to be because we don't have anything Yahusha said in Hebrew written down and saved by anybody.
Not a word.
Not a word.
No, not a word. No, not a word. So the whole thing is just absolutely remarkable as to who in the world God is talking about. So what I'd like to do is begin, if we can, just from the beginning of this, and then we'll kind of get into the meat of it. But the thing to recognize, first of all, is that are there chapters and verses in the book of the Great Isaiah Scroll?
No, sir.
No.
There's not a single.
Right,
where the eighth chapter ends and the ninth chapter begins, where there's this nice clean break, and we start with verse 1, chapter 9, verse 22 of chapter 8. Is there a page break or a chapter designation?
No, that's invention of a little priest in France.
Right. Yeah, I'd have forgotten if it's France or England, but somebody riding on, or Germany, but somebody
on horseback,
riding on horseback and says, you know, this is hard to keep track of this stuff. I think I'm going to put in verses. And the problem of doing that is it caused people to believe that if they quote a verse in its entirety, that they haven't taken it out of context.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they'll quote John 3:16 and think that, oh my, you know, that's the answer for everything.
Yep.
And not realize
that's all that matters.
That the entire discussion of the third chapter of Yohanan was based on Yahusha telling Nicodemus, why are you asking me these questions? You're a teacher of the Torah.
You
know what the Torah says? You know, and when you recognize that what Yahusha was saying, he was actually speaking about himself. He was born of water and of the Spirit. And those two births were separated by 30 years.
right.
So, you know, Yosha was not virgin born. He was not, God was not born. He was an ordinary guy for 30 years, which is the only way that makes any sense. And then the Spirit came upon him on the Jordan, in the Jordan River, and Yahweh said, "This is my son, of whom I'm proud," or something of along that lines. Yeah, proud is probably not a term that Yahweh would have used, but nonetheless, he probably did say, "This is my son." He became the Son of God at that moment. But was he the first Son of God? Was he even the most acclaimed Son of God? No, the most acclaimed Son of God is Dode.
Yeah.
You know, the only person in human history that God has said, "He is my son and I am his father," in one sentence, is Dode. And of course, with Dode, we have vastly more accurate information about his life chronicled in the writings. And this enormous treasure of information in the Psalms and in the Proverbs about his insights as to how to be part of Yahweh's family. So, Kirk, you're right. I'm accused, we're accused, of making too big a deal about Dode.
Yeah.
And yes,
but, you know, we also tell everybody about where the words lead you, and that's where they're leading you.
That's where they lead.
Yeah.
So this is what's really interesting. This, let's just go through this, because if you want to understand something, you have to understand the context. So what is the context? The context is Yeshayah 8. And so what does Yeshayah 8 talk about? It says, "Then Yahweh expressed with unfolding implications to me, on our own initiative, obtain an extremely large scroll designed to reveal and make known, to disclose and to show oneself, to choose to write on it with a pen in ordinary human form, using the common characters associated with mortal man." And then write, "Concerning Mahar, Shalal, Kush, Baz, the rapid and thoughtless plunder of those enjoying their disturbing behavior while quickly capturing a spoil as militants and armed robbers." God has a sense of humor. If you were to take everything that's been found in the Dead Sea, everything that's been found among the his witness through man, mm-hmm. is there not only one scroll that's called Great?
Oh, yeah.
Great. We only have one scroll in its entirety?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. Not the great Isaiah scroll? Did he not forecast that right here? On your own initiative, obtain a great scroll.
A great, big one. Yeah.
That, I think, is funny. Now, this is the part that isn't funny, but it is, I tell you, it is goosebumping. He asked him to write in the common characters associated with mortal man. The term that he used is the term for mortal man. Write in the characters of mortal man. Well, there's only one alphabet that depicts the characteristics of mortal man. More than half the letters are designed to reflect the human anatomy, including, Haya, which is the entire person,
yes.
and Rosh, which is the head of the individual, and Pei, which is the mouth of an individual. And, you know, we have the foot of an individual. We have the eyes of the individual. No. Half the letters depict human forms, an arm and hand.
Yeah.
And then those that don't depict human anatomy depict human endeavors,
mm-hmm.
plowing the field, shepherding sheep, building a fence, building a home.
Even the nun.
Yeah, even the nun being a sperm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. So I just thought that would be interesting. So he said, "I want you to write it using the characters that reflect the nature of mortal man." So he's describing the alphabet. Then he says, so he says, I want you to write this name. So that's reminiscent of what would be said later through Hosea, you know, write that you are not my children, and then because he was divorcing them. He says, then I'd like to call on witnesses to testify for me because we can help one another by repeatedly issuing a warning, admonishing others while providing a restoring witness to affirm future reoccurring events as a means to approach me, an eternal witness to provide everlasting testimony, presenting the enduring evidence regarding what happened in the ancient past and into the future, who are truthful and reliable, trustworthy and verifiable, dependable and steadfast, who are unwavering and enduring, correct, credible, and confident, confirming and supportive, who are certain and nourishing, serving as workmen and artists. I thought you'd like that.
I'd like that idea. Thank you very much.
Yes. So, yeah, you know, it says, I want people who are artists. I happen to like
that. There you
that.
Go.
You're an artist.
There you go, Molly.
Yeah. You are just right. Molly's the word. You're an artist because you can replicate things that we see in three dimensions, in two dimensions, and using light and perspective and mm-hmm. color, you can render an impression of what we see. I can't do that. But there's another form of art. You know, the arts aren't limited to painting and drawing.
No.
Writing is an art form.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And translating, I think, is... And that's very much struck me too. I think it's an art. It's not. And if it wasn't an art, one couldn't be expressive. You know, you can take a photograph and capture that which you observe, but art is expressive. Writing, if you're doing it the way Yahweh intended, and translating the way that Yahweh intended, is artistic. It's expressive. You get to think about it and say, you know, this is how I think, this is what I think God is telling us and why he's telling us it in this way. And of the choices I have of translating these words, here's the ones that I think apply.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an expressive.
Well, it's also why you can end up with different translations. I actually had this earlier this week. I was translating a series of passages, and I came across the word I was struggling with, so... I do what I do sometimes, is I'll pull up your translations and see if you translated the word before and see how you did it and get some insight. Well, it turns out you had translated it in the exact same verse I was translating, and you had actually translated, like, the last five verses I had done. So I went back and started comparing my translation to yours, and, you know, it was interesting because, yeah, we were basically saying the same thing, but we had chosen different words as a way to translate it, you know, conveying the same message. But,
right.
Yeah, it's the same message, but it was conveyed differently. That's the artistic part of it, the art of translation. Yeah, we came up with different translations that said the same thing.
Correct. And that, I think, is a good thing to do. It's expansive. It's expressive. And there are lots of ways to, and there should be lots of ways to convey an idea.
Yahweh said a lot of the same thing multiple ways.
Right.
So obviously that's okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, words are a tool. Their job of a word is to convey a message. Yeah,
correct.
I can convey the same message using these words as you convey using these words, but it's, you know, the question is, does it convey the message? And that's all words are. They're a tool.
Right. And we can even differ and not convey the same message when translating the same words. Because there's a possibility that God intended, first there's a possibility I'm wrong, possibility you're wrong, possibility we're both wrong, possibility we're both right in saying different things just because the words allow those different thoughts. And while I try to be expansive and to convey everything that seems to be appropriate, at least up to the point of not being so wordy that the initial thought is lost in the process.
Mm-hmm.
There are, Kirk, you know, because this is something that you do often, you find added things that shed light on it, which as the artist you want to incorporate in, you know, as the writer, I'll pick upon, say, as probably as far as I can go with this.
Mm-hmm.
We should not be concerned that our translations differ so long as they are true to the words.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
So he says that speaking of these who will speak for him, that they are workmen and artists, and we do work at it, who are sure, right, and firm, as, such as your Yah, which is your Yah, your is light, so it means Yahweh is light, the one who assists by teaching, and Zachariah, which means to remember Yah, the son of Yabushkayahu, which means Yahweh blesses from the rock.
The rock right there.
Yeah. Well, in the previous chapter, we go through and we mine each of these words for the maximum amount of meaning, but I'm just trying to get you the context that leads into Yahshua 9:6, because I came to an entirely different conclusion than I've ever considered before. And so I approached and presented myself before the prophetess and conceived and gave birth to a son. Now, I think the prophetess is, we're going back to Gomer and the situation with Hosea, where he wanted his people to understand what he felt like to be cheated on. God did. And so, you know, we're going to create a son, because I don't think he'd create a son that was Yashayah's through his wife, and we never hear that he has a wife, that you would name this way. Call his name Ma'ar Shalal Kush Baz, rapid and thoughtless plunder by those enjoying their disturbing behavior, while quickly capturing a spoil as militants and armed robbers, impetuously and anxiously, rashly and rapidly, headlong, without thinking, without hesitation, plundering their prey, taking the spoil, acting quickly, showing haste, rushing while dismayed, actually enjoying being greatly disturbed while capturing the plunder from a militant assault as part of an armed robbery. Because before the boy, representing the scattered sheep who are in danger, calls out, "My father," or "My mother," the political prowess, military strength, and economic wealth of Damascus, along with the plunder and spoils of Shimron, Samaria, will be carried away before the presence of the king of Asher, Assyria. Yet again, joining these things, and this was right before that happened, this was probably written 20 years before that occurred. Yet again, joining these things together, adding more information, Yahweh spoke to me, continuing to testify, providing an eternal witness which restores and sustains some, while admonishing and warning others regarding unfavorable and disastrous future events, to say, indeed, because these people have rejected and come to despise and spurn, avoiding an association with and demonstrating your aversion to the waters, that which is essential to all life and which serves as the universal solvent, and therefore for cleansing properties of the water, of the one who is sent, Ha Shiloh, who walks by approaching mercifully, by acting kindly to those facing a potentially violent situation, moving gently and approaching in a comforting manner, showing humility and patience while delighting in and gaily celebrating Retzin, the self-willed and pleasure-seeking, and Ben Ramaliahu, the son of the one who is exalted above Yahweh. Behold, pay attention, look up, listen. Yahweh, Almighty God, is withdrawing, and he is lifting up against them. Accordingly, the waters of the sea as a flood of tears, as a powerful torrent, the potent and the purposeful flow of a forceful multitude of severe individuals intent on accomplishing their purpose, flowing together like a mighty river. In addition to the numerous soldiers, abundant archers, and extensive military of the king, their political leader and dictator of Asher, Assyria, those who fight and conquer in the name of their sun god, along with the entire manifestation of his power, the glorification of its wealth and status, and the attribution of divine status to Asher and his king, a floodwater from the seas. That's a flood, a torrent of Gentiles, and their military would flood into the northern kingdom and would destroy them. That's what that name means, and that's what he just described. And it will rise over all, and by the way, this as is the case with most of Yahweh's prophecies, there isn't just one fulfillment. There would be no reason for Yahshayah to provide this testimony in writing 20 years before it occurred. They could listen to him. They knew it was coming. Why write it down? It was written down because it's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
In the 17th chapter of Yahshayah, in the 18th, specifically said that a tidal wave of Goyim, of Islamic terrorists, are going to flood into Israel in the last days during the Magog War. So this is also indicative of that event. And it will rise over all of its channels from the deepest places in the sea, along with the offshoots, gathering together to die while walking over its banks. Yeah, that's what Muslims do. They gather together to die. And it will go past, sweeping by in such a way as to alter Yahudah, exerting the considerable force of a flood while extending up and reaching its neck in adversarial fashion, seeking to besiege while making contact with and violently striking, coming to stretch out its wings, fulfilling the breadth of your land. Emmanuel, God with us. Choose to associate yourself with the misleading shepherds, forming an association with evil and disingenuous pastors, befriending and attending to harmful and destructive leaders, you people. And you have chosen to be confused, to be discouraged and broken, to be destroyed, having picked your own fate, which is to be dismayed, terrorized, and bewildered, shattered and abolished, cast down in fear. Well, that's as strong as anything you're ever going to see, at least until you get into the 9th chapter. Choose to associate yourself with misleading shepherds, forming an association with evil and disingenuous pastors, befriending and attending to harmful and destructive leaders, you people. And you will have chosen to be confused, discouraged and broken, destroyed, having picked your own fate, which is to be dismayed, terrorized, and bewildered, shattered, even cast down in fear. Choose to listen and respond, pondering being obedient to any distant land, arming yourself while preparing for your defense, choosing to gird yourself for war, equipping your military to defend yourself. And you will have chosen to be by yourself, having chosen your own fate, which is to be terrorized and bewildered, confused and paranoid, having failed by doing something dreadful. Wow. Choose to arm yourself, and you will be all alone. Choose to gird yourself for war, equipping your military, then you're going to need to defend yourself. Choose to devise your schemes and plan your course of action based upon the revolting advice and defiant counsel of others who promote malicious ideas. It'll be nullified because you have chosen to be in violation of the covenant. Choose to make a statement. It's not going to stand. Be affirmed. It will not be fulfilled or accomplished because truly God is with us. For indeed, this is what Yahweh said to me in a manner akin to a strong and strengthening hand, thereby teaching me so that I would be correct, guiding me and instructing me so that I would recognize the importance of being right, keeping me from walking in the ways of these particular people. He approached by saying, I do not want you to continually or consistently speak of making a habit of claiming or declaring, even designating something as are responding to conspiracies, to anything which by association the people continue to claim that this is a conspiracy, that this is a covert plan to carry out harmful acts for a political or religious purpose, that it is people conspiring to spellbind others and to control them through a deceitful means, tying things together in a scripted fashion to advance a political agenda. In addition, do not respect nor revel in showing any regard for that which concerns them. For what they regard and believe has the propensity to prevail will cause you to wonder about them even fear them. Boy, that's about as don't touch anything to do with the conspiracy. Don't accept them. Don't promote them. Don't declare them. Don't think about them. Don't ponder them. Stay away from conspiracies. Why? Because conspiracies destroy your credibility. If you are a conspiracy theorist, your ability to exercise good judgment, to deal with evidence and reason, are as debilitated as if you were overtly religious or overtly political. So, being a conspiracy advocate destroys your ability to think, and if you can't think, it's impossible to know.
Can't judge.
It destroys your credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And once we're part of the covenant, isn't that our responsibility? To be credible as we convey Yahweh's testimony? So for those two reasons, God says, don't go anywhere near them. With regard to Yahweh of the spiritual implements, him you should set apart. Set apart from what? What has he been talking about?
Religion?
You know, when I had the, I had a conniption fit that the folks on Popular Truth were routinely combining my translations of Yahweh's words and transliterations of words and ideas that are only found in the books that I've written or the shows that we've done on the books that I've written. And they were combining them with the most extreme conspiracies. And I said, don't do that. What did Yahweh just said? With regard to Yahweh, him you should set apart. Never including him in anything which is common, profane, or mundane. Don't combine Yahweh with the kind of stuff that people are prone to believe. God says don't do it.
Well, because all that you're doing then is you're usurping Yahweh's credibility to promote your own agenda.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And the same thing, you know, the Unpopular Truth was usurping your credibility to promote their agenda.
Correct.
And by doing so, credibility, they destroy your credibility, and they destroy
right.
Yahweh's credibility.
My credibility only has merit for one thing, and that is there are just so few voices out there willing to translate Yahweh's testimony, to publish their translations, and to convey insights related to them, and to do radio programs that expose people to them that would encourage them to read those books. Since there are very few, if any, other people doing that, destroying my credibility by putting it into a site that is vicious, that is antagonistic to people, who abuses people, and then who drags all of that into the muck of conspiracy, is about the worst thing you could do. The only thing you could do to be worse is to combine all of that in an anti-Semitic rant.
Yeah. That's deadly.
Yeah, it is. That's deadly things. So then it says, so then he will become a sanctuary, as a set-apart place. But he will be as a stone for smiting, as a rock for stumbling, for both houses of Israel, as a trap and as a snare for the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And then they shall stumble upon them and fall, and they will be captured, broken, and controlled by others. Now, to a large degree, what Yahweh said has become a stumbling block for Israel. They stumble all over it. They trip all over it. It's right there in front of them. It's part of their land. It's part of their heritage, and they trip all over it.
The great Isaiah scroll is right down in the building. You can go look at it. Anytime.
Right. Right. In their native
tongue. That's horrible.
Right. In their native tongue. Right. It's right there. And thus far in Yeshayah, there are three things that God has said over and over and over again. I despise religion. And if you are religious, we have nothing to do with one another. I despise politics. And if you are political, we have nothing to do with one another. I despise the military. And if you're going to be part of the military, support your military, honor your military. We have nothing in common. So what do they do? All the
above. All the above.
All those bonds. They will stumble upon them. They will be captured, broken, and controlled by others. Yeah, if Yahweh's words are a stumbling block to you, you will be controlled by others. Wrap up and restrict the written testimony presenting correct and corroborating information, the authorized documentation regarding the confirmation of the binding and restoring relationship agreement pertaining to an inheritance. Securing access to the Torah and its source of teaching, guidance, instruction, and direction. Among those I teach, to those I clearly reveal knowledge, to my disciples, and receptive students who are willing to learn from me, and for those who are personally familiar with me and with my approach and pattern, who are ready to respond and properly accept my guidance. Now, there are two aspects to this. The first aspect of it, until a year ago, I would have disagreed with God. And, you know, there's a lot of things where, you know, I wish God had said something different or taken a different approach. Most of the time, in fact, now all of the time, as I've come to know him better and I've a little less irrational, I've come to realize that even the things that he has said that I have previously disagreed with, now I agree with. This is an example of something that a year ago I would have disagreed with. Why would you, God, cause your people or tell your prophet that I don't want my people to understand what I have said? Why would you say that? I know now.
You know now.
Yeah, well, I know now because I read what was written at an unpopular truth. And it made me want to vomit. I read what was written at the anti-Semitic rant of those who also quoted from Yahweh's testimony in the midst of their anti-Semitic rant. And it made me want to puke. There really is nothing more harmful than somebody with limited information that twists that information to mislead. That was the nature of Paul. That's what he did. That's what happened on both of those social media sites. And so if God's people, if the children of Israel, brighter than most, more articulate than most, more influential than most, had studied the Torah and come to know more than they do, they come to know Yahweh's name, they come to know the terms and conditions of the covenant, they come to know the covenant's role in God's plan. They come to understand what each of the seven Moed Mikre represents. Because of their character flaws, because of their overall rejection of Yahweh, because of their ego where they think they were better than Yahweh, because of their propensity to be religious and political, that knowledge would have been twisted to defame Yahweh, to mislead. It's just as a moron Christian that's promoting Paul's letters is vastly less destructive than someone who uses Yahweh's name, who cites from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to mislead. God didn't want people going off half-cocked, taking snippets out of context without understanding them, and misleading in such a way that would destroy the credibility of his overall message. I witnessed it up close and personal at Unpopular Truth and then in the anti-Semitic social media site. That's what God wants to avoid. That's why I came away saying, it's my fault. I mean, I lived with it's my fault for quite some time because I blame myself for making the answers too readily available. You know, here are the five terms and conditions of the covenant. This is what the covenant represents. This is what God is offering. Here's the five benefits of the covenant. Here's what each of the seven Moed Mikre represent and where they lead. This is what the Torah actually exists to accomplish. You want to understand it? View it through Dode's eyes. This is what Dode said. Made it too easy. Now,
well, for those of us who are a little slow, it was wonderful.
So, I blame myself that I created, you know, a bevy, a brood, probably as many as 100 individuals who parroted some of what I said that didn't understand it, who clearly were not part of the covenant, who didn't know Yahweh but acted as if they did. And I said, that's my fault. I made it too easy. And then, you know, then occasionally I'll have someone write me, like, JB, you put together a PDF of just the core books on the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, plus questioning Paul. You know, it comes out to 6,000-7,000 pages. And I said, well, I guess that's not really too easy then, is it?
No. You have to persevere quite a lot.
Right. And then, you know, you read some of the chapters of these books, and unless you're pretty devoted to learning, chances are it's not really all that easy. But that's what God says. I don't want it to be easy. But then he says, there are a group of people that I do want to know. Don't preclude them from knowing. And who are those that he is precluding from learning? He says that wrap up and restrict the written testimony presenting the correct and corroborated information, the authorized documentation regarding the confirming and binding restoring relationship agreement pertaining to an inheritance, securing access to the Torah. But who is it that it's still available to? Secure it for those I teach. Now, for that, you'd have to know that Torah means teaching. Mm-hmm. To those I clearly reveal knowledge. So, at that point, if you're translating Yahweh's testimony and you're not getting any insights from it, you know, there's a problem. If you're studying his teaching, you should build a foundation of knowledge. To my disciples, those who are receptive students, who are willing to learn from me, who are personally familiar with me. You know, JB, I've probably said this a thousand times, that I think that the single most important ingredient to an accurate translation is actually knowing Yahweh.
Yes.
So those who are personally familiar with me, and my approach, my pattern, who are ready to respond properly and accept my guidance. You've got to be willing to go where the words lead. If you're going to fight God, if you're going to oppose what he says, you're going to challenge what he had to say, it's not for you. So he says, so I wait in anticipation, patient while longing for that which is inscribed and engraved, which cuts me into the relationship of drawing near Yahweh, who is concealing his presence, making his appearance and characteristics, even his existence, unknown from the house of Jacob, from Israel. Then, therefore, I will confidently await the outcome, which is beneficial and good, anticipating, eagerly expecting, and in gathering an association with him. Yahweh withdrew from Israel because Israel chose to form a relationship with the Lord, because they became religious, because they built their army to defend them. They rejected Yahweh, so Yahweh withdrew from them. And so here is important of all of his prophets at this time. I think Dode is the most important prophet. Moshe would be second to Dode. Yashaya is probably third in line in terms of most important prophets. So here he is saying, all right, I get it. God wants to preclude Israel from understanding his Torah. But those who are really devoted to learning, he wants it secure in their hands so they can learn from it, so he can enjoy them becoming familiar with him. So Jesse says, oh, I get it. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to be patient here. And ultimately, there's going to be a harvest, and ultimately, this is all going to turn out well. But we're going to have to be patient. It would be 2,700 years.
It's a lot of patience.
before it would turn out well. Yes, indeed. Behold, I and the children to whom to show the way to the benefits of the relationship Yahweh has placed before me, brought and presented to me, even given to me for signs which serve to illustrate an example, as a banner to convey a marvelous account which serves as proof and is memorable, and is awe-inspiring and is empowering miracles, important symbols which encourage a response by way of an indication of future events in Yisrael in conjunction with Yahweh of the spiritual implements, who dwells camping out, making a home, and remaining in conjunction with the ridgeline of Zion, where the signs are posted along the way. So, there's Yahshua, and I, you know, I get it. My job is there are some children who I can help, and I'm going to do the best I can to illustrate what I have learned, what I have heard, and to convey it in the most memorable possible way. In particular, I'm going to focus on future events in conjunction with Yisrael and Yahweh, so that people understand the implications of camping out in his home along the ridgeline of Zion. And when they say to you, encouraging you, you should consult with, resort to, and expect answers from, seriously considering revelations in association with the mediums, those who claim to communicate with ghosts, speaking for saints and familiar spirits, and the spiritualists, those claiming to possess spiritual insights, who meditate and mutter, expressing their woeful and imaginative opinions, who twitter satanic musings as offspring of venomous...
I love you. I wish you were.
Twitter
away.
He actually used the word Twitter.
There you go. And associated with Satan. That's good.
Oh, with their satanic musing and the poisonous vipers. Yeah. Instead, shouldn't the people consult with seeking information while expecting answers from their God and for the benefit of the living, not the dead?
Never forget all that next Tuesday tonight, right?
Yeah, well,
Halloween.
Yeah, that's right, Halloween. Yeah, no, we're gonna do the Halloween thing.
Yeah, we want to.
But yes,
it's all about dead people in Halloween.
Yeah. According to the Torah, the zombies are my favorite because they depict society at large, the Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Torah, and according to the written testimony, which presents correct and corroborating information regarding restoration of the relationship and resulting inheritance, if they do not speak in a manner consistent with this specific word and message, then by association, they lack discernment. They are for naught. They are without light and are approaching Shakar, also known as Satan. Then they will pass through the darkness of Shakar, stubborn and stiff-necked, strong-willed and perplexing, wholly resistant to any advice or assistance due to a puzzling lack of humility and an attitude of superiority, and will experience cruelty and brutality as a result, and starving and famished. They will be afflicted. It was the reference to Shakar that caused me in the previous chapter, the one we'll deal with in future days, to find the Canaanite Bible. Shakar is mentioned in the Canaanite Bible. Didn't know that, but there he is. Shakar is, you know, it's Halal ben Shakar. But Shakar is specifically mentioned in the Canaanite Bible. And the Canaanite Bible presents the religion known today as Christianity. So it's the most interesting expose, and we'll go through it in a future program. And it shall come to pass when they are malnourished and weakened as a result of being willfully malicious and deliberately afflicted. They will become antagonized and provoked to anger, struggling with their change in status, furious and cognitive dissidence, having been uprooted and splintered. Their status will diminish and they will be treated with contempt as a result of their propensity to slander and insult the reputation of their leaders against their God, turning away unfaithful in the the relationship. Boy, did that ever happen to Israel. Mm-hmm. And unto the land they will look, but behold, seeing disfavor along with adversarial antagonism and darkness with discouraging oppression, and into a place devoid of light that they will be driven and stray, be exiled and enticed, lured and scattered, outcasts and banished. Can you say the Holocaust?
Mm.
That's what he's predicting here. They're going to endure the Holocaust, and they're going to look to the land with longing, but even it will be swallowed up in the darkness of Islam. So that is takes us through 8:22. 9:1 is just a continuation of it. It begins with the word nevertheless. By contrast, that notwithstanding, there will be no sadness or gloomy darkness for those who were subjected and oppressed. This by comparison and contrast for her to the previous time when he receded from and disdained the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. They are tribes of the northern kingdom, two of the 12 tribes, one at the extreme northeast of Israel, and the other landlocked, second highest northern tribe, or third highest, but landlocked, right between the Sea of Galilee and the Mediterranean. Yeah, that is correct. And they do a lot of things together that in a future time we'll talk about what it is that they did that causes Yahweh to reference these two. But he's basically saying, okay, this is what you're going to endure. He moves into what we now call the ninth chapter. He says, that's going to come to an end. I withdrew from you. But at the time will come when I'm no longer going to do to you, and this oppression is going to end. Well, it hasn't ended yet. And then, after that, he will either distinguish and reward, honor and glorify, or severely and harshly deal with the stubborn and irrational and troublesome nature. Now, this is Kibbet. I presented both options here. There's only one that makes any sense, and we'll deal with that in a moment. But to start out, I'll give you both. Kibbet can mean either distinguish and reward, honor and glorify, or severely and harshly deal with the stubborn and irrational, troublesome nature of the way of the sea. He's already talked about the way of the sea, right? It devastates Israel. Beyond the Yarden. Now, the way of the sea beyond the Yarden, that way he's only talking about these Gentile nations in Arabia, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Pakistan. This is the homeland, former homeland of Babylon, Assyria, Persia. That's what he's talking about here. So the way of the sea beyond the Yarden can only speak about these Muslims. That's who's there. The pivot point in sociopolitical realm of the Gentile nations, just in case you didn't pick that up, this is the pivot point in the sociopolitical realm of the Gentile nations. The pivot point is interesting because the whole world from a collective position is going to pivot around what happens in Syria. Mm-hmm. When Syria finally falls, you know, and the West is saying, oh boy, aren't we wonderful? We defeated ISIS. Aren't we great? We drove them out of Raqqa. Well, I've got news for you. First of all, the Islamic State metastasized. It's around the world. It now exists in virtually every country of the world.
Congratulations. You removed the tumor from the lung. It's now in the brains, heart, and liver.
Right. Correct. It's a cancer, and it metastasized, and the Islamic State is now around the world. And it's only around the world because you were stupid enough to fight fire with fire. Because you thought the best way to stop jihadists was to play jihad. Congratulations, that's the mess you made. And The reality is that it's not going away, and that it's going to get vastly worse. That once Damascus and Syria fall, and they're not getting better, because you know we made an alliance with the Kurds to fight the Islamic State, and all the Kurds wanted was an autonomous region, and yet the NATO ally Turkey is bombing and will continue to bomb the Kurds. Iraq just said, we're not going to even listen to any national aspirations for the Kurdish people. And so the United States armed them to the gills. They successfully defeated in Syria the Islamic State, and now they're going to be warred against by two other countries, Iraq and Turkey, both of which the United States has armed. And all the while, the United States is continuing to say that Assad must go, and yet they just removed the only legitimate, the only group that had any chance of doing Assad in, because now it's just Hezbollah and Assad working together. No, the Kurds don't want to continue. The Kurds have no interest in taking Assad out. They just want their own homeland. We created a disaster. We've got China and Russia on one side, Europe and the United States on another. We created a goddamn mess is what we did. And so the pivot point of all of this is indeed the area of the Gentiles just on the other side of the Jordan River. That is particularly what the mess that is now awaiting, and it's going to be disastrous. Now I'm going to skip over, because we'll come back to this at a later time, the history of those two tribes. So this then is the way that I think that 9-1 should be translated. Nevertheless, there'll be no sadness or gloomy darkness, no dejection or discouragement for those who are subjected and oppressed. This is by comparison and contrast for her to the previous time when he receded from her, showing his disdain, showing contempt and disregard for the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. And then, at a later time, following that, he will severely and harshly deal with the stubborn and irrational, troublesome nature, the improper attitude and arrogance, the inadequacy and insensibility, the lack of responsiveness and pretentiousness, as well as the vehemently oppressive nature of the way of the sea, Gentiles, beyond the Yarden, on the opposing side of the Jordan, the open doorway, pivot point, and socio-political realm of the Gentile nations. Yeshayah 9-1, boy, does that ever establish where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it can only be understood coming out of Yeshayah 8. The family of related people who walked in the darkness. This is now talking only about Israel. The family, of related people, the nation of kinsmen who share the same ethnicity, culture, and language, who are biologically related, used in reference to Israel and to distinguish Israelites from Goyim, who walked in the darkness, a great light. Those who have lived in the realm of the foreboding darkness and the shadow of death, a light for a time will actually shine upon them. Has that occurred to us, our young lady?
No.
Nope.
So here is 9-2, and we're talking about a future event. Now, Christians, by taking this out of context, will assume, wait a minute, you know, this is... God was going to reveal his light to the world. He is going to become, you know, the Son of God, and that's the light. Did he appear as light? Did the world see him?
Yeah. He appeared as light.
Did enlightened world, Israel, not, the topic here, did they see him as light?
No.
No. When he comes back, he's coming back as light. This is 17 years in the future. This is not talking about the baby Jesus. This is 17 years in the future. This is talking about Israel and what they're going to experience 17 years in the future, and how different it is from what they've experienced up to this point. this now is 9:3. You have expanded, this is Yashaya speaking, numerous of those from different races and places. You have expanded numerous of all, use the Hebrew, goyim, goy, increasing their joy. Cheerfully they rejoice before your presence, similar to the jubilation of the harvest, just as they are ecstatic when they share in the spoil. Now, the first part of this, I'm just all over, like, white on rice.
Mm-hmm.
The last part I was originally opposed to until I realized what God is saying. But he has indeed expanded numerous, boy, increased and prolonged a number of, boy, the people from different races and places. We be them.
Mm-hmm.
They be us.
They're all listening tonight, too. Most
right?
of them.
Yeah, most of them. Increasing their joy, isn't that the truth? Their pleasure, their happiness.
Sure.
Cheerfully. Now, this explains our presence at his return, our participation in the harvest. Cheerfully, they rejoice before your presence. Now, he's going to come. He just said he's coming as light. Cheerfully, they're going to rejoice at your presence. We're going to be there cheering them on as spiritual beings up there in the sky looking down on all this. And it's going to be very similar jubilation to our experience during the harvest. I think that it would come. Well, I don't think. I know for certain what God is saying is that as much as we enjoyed the harvest, we're going to enjoy
mm-hmm.
His return.
Every better.
Bit as much. Yeah, every bit as much. Maybe better. Yeah, I don't know if this is better. You know,
okay. It's all pretty good. That's one.
Yeah, there is. There is. Really,
no,
really happy. And there is really, really, really happy. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there is.
It's going to be good.
Wait. Yeah. This is going to be good. We're going to have a great time at the harvest because, you know, that's the time we're brought home. We get to be spiritual beings. We get to all the benefits of the covenant. And we're going to enjoy Yahweh returning because we know that he's going to camp out on earth for 1,000 years and restore it back to the conditions of Eden, and it's going to be tremendous fun. Now, as it relates to the jubilation, being ecstatic, being glad when they share in the spoil, spoil is the right term. The reason spoil is the right term is that what he's going to tell us next is that like the day of Midian, his light is going to incinerate every army of every country. And so as that happens, there is going to be a spoil. When armies are defeated, there is a spoil to share. And those armies were from countries that sought to control the world. Well, now the world's ours. Everything in it. So that's why it's called a spoil. It is the appropriate term here. Our inheritance is everything God has to offer in the entire universe. But at that moment, what we get to celebrate, the spoil we get at that very moment, is the earth itself. And the earth itself,
the earth free of all that stuff.
Yeah, it was controlled by those people who will soon be incinerated. And so the spoil is the earth itself. The spoil is the land of Yisrael.
Yeah.
Appropriate term when you look at it from the right perspective. For you have cast away the yoke of his economic burden and the means to extend the reach and influence of the ruling authorities wielding a staff, of the religious authorities, a scepter, political authorities, or spear, military authority, off of his back with regard to those who would strive to exploit That's when we enter the millennial Shabbat,
mm-hmm.
there'll be no economic burdens. When we work, we will work to achieve something vastly more rewarding than economic compensation. So all of the economic burden is cast away. But more important than that, the means to extend the reach and influence of the ruling authorities, religious, political, and military, are gone. There'll be no one striving to exploit us anymore. Back to Eden. And this is what's really neat. And this is the statement immediately before, the most quoted in the among the prophets in the Christendom. And as the day of Midian, surely, since every boot of marching armies is part of the commotion and clamoring of battle, and the clothing is befouled by wallowing in blood, they will come to exist as fuel, to be burned up in the fire of blazing light and radiant energy. All of the powers of the world, political, religious, military, are all going to be incinerated by Yahweh's light. And he's saying...
That's terrific.
Yeah, he's saying that's who he's talking about here. And he's saying that is going to happen upon his return. So what does that mean? That means that there are massive amounts of military personnel motivated by politics and religion in and around Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of what we would call the Battle of Armageddon. Yeah, Armageddon. Which is the valley. In fact, the valley is just south of the two tribes that were spoken of as the gateway of the Gentiles. Well, they're the pivot point, or the gateway, the doorway of the Gentiles. They're the doorway into the valley of Megiddo. And Armageddon is the Mount of Megiddo. And so what he's talking about is that he's going to return and the world's going to be at war. And if you're in the military or anywhere associated with the military or promoting the military, you're instantly vaporized. But what he's also saying is going to be like the day of Midian. God is going to do it himself. And all Midian and the 300 men that were with him did was they carried some tiki torches and some shofars. That was it. They did nothing else but tiki torches and shofars. God did the rest. And that's what's going to happen when he returns. It's not going to be an army who wipes out armies. Yeah, I was just going to incinerate him. He said, you know, I don't want any more of this. You've done your devilish deed. You're gone. And so it talks about, you know, this idea that, you know, Christians are so happy about this notion of the second coming, and they see him coming down in the sky dressed in his white robes, his arms outstretched to them, and there'll be this giant Christian love. And no, he's coming back as light, and you aren't going to survive it, Christian. You're going to be incinerated. You know, he is going to obliterate millions of people right at that moment. That is, in the day of Midian, the whole experience of Midian, and wow, I devoted a whole lot of time to turn to Judges. I rendered two entire chapters of that, and another time I'll share with you the insights that can be learned from Midian, because they are many. It is really, it's really, really. Did you have a chance to read it?
I started getting through quite a bit of it, so yeah. Plus our conversation the other day as well, so I hadn't had a chance to look up anything just to see what else is there. But yeah, it's good stuff.
It is.
You're on the money. You're right on
right now. Because I want to go from Yahweh vaporizing all of the armies to this next statement, because this is the next word out of God's mouth. Key, for indeed. Surely because a child, Yeled, a young boy, from an infant to a young man. A Yeled describes every male who has ever lived. Is born. Yalad. Yalad is the verb that defines Yeled. Yalad means is conceived and brought forth through a pregnant woman. Okay. Who among us?
Is not.
Who would you disqualify of all males who have lived this far? This is as common as it gets. Yalid, Yalad.
We don't have any test tube babies yet. They're working on the whole cloning thing, but we're not there yet.
No, not with humans. This is descriptive of every person who has ever lived. It doesn't get more common than this. For indeed, a child is born. I want to posture the idea that this child who is born isn't Yosha.
No.
There's no place in this where Yosha is mentioned. I don't think it's Yosha. I think it's the child who's already been born. I think it's the child that that enables Yisrael, enables Yehuda, enables those who are listening turn to Yahweh to see the light. And that child is Dod. For indeed, a child is born. A to us, and a son is given to us. Who did Yahweh call his son?
Oh, Dod.
Dod. And he's the only one that we have absolute affirmation that he called his son, because we can't trust what's in the Christian New Testament. The only person that we know for certain that Yahweh said, he is my son, is Dod. And he's the only person, even if you were to believe the Christian New Testament, he says, and I am his father.
Yeah.
Dod. This is talking about Dod. For indeed, a child is born to us, an ordinary child, and a son is given to us. He is produced for us. He is provided to us. He is set in place for us. He is appointed and bestowed. Nathan, was Dod not produced for us, provided for us, set in place for us, appointed for us, bestowed for us?
Yeah. Samuel anointed him, didn't he? He chose him.
Yeah.
For us.
Right.
For Yisrael.
Exactly. For us. The means to engage and endure shall exist on his shoulder. Absolutely. He's the guy that taught us how to engage and endure with Yahweh. This is Waha Shara. People want to translate this government only because some moron back in the days of the Latin Vulgate was looking at a Greek translation and decided it ought to be government. Misra does not mean government. It is the means of empowerment and in liberation. Governments do not empower and they do not liberate. They do the opposite.
They do enslave.
Yeah, it's the ability to persist and persevere. It is from Sarah. Sarah is the middle of Yisrael, is the name of the mother of the covenant. It means the means to persist, to persevere, and to endure. To engage in tent, exerting oneself powerfully, to be let loose and set free, and to be powered, shall exist on his shoulder. He's the one that told us, that taught us how to properly observe the Torah so we could engage and endure in the covenant. That's what he shouldered. It also says, by the way, shoulder shakam could also be translated upon his ability to rise early in the day. Dod, during his shepherd years, when he was writing most all of his psalms, was when he arose early in the day. And in terms of history, he came to us in the first half of human history.
Yeah.
Then his name shall be called out Wonderful Counselor. Now, is it appropriate to call Yosha Wonderful Counselor?
Appropriate.
He didn't provide any counsel, really.
No. In fact, even spoke of the counselor that would come.
Oh, go through
the
Spirit. Right. Yeah.
But did Dod serve as a marvelous, amazing, extraordinary, and distinguished, set-apart advisor, consultant,
with all those
one who provides direction and thought-provoking guidance?
The Psalm, the 119th Psalm alone puts him in that category.
Right.
Yeah. Of course he is.
I'm telling you, this is absolutely, that line, that next statement, is absolutely not about Yosha, because he was never a wonderful counselor. And it is absolutely about Dod. Now, I want to be careful here when I say absolutely. in many, many, many ways. In fact, as I was studying the life of Dode and I was writing it for this series of book observations, and particularly as I was tracking down, I spent two chapters on Branch Shemek. As I studied Branch, I realized that that title, which is far more prevalent in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms than is Mashiach. I mean, 50-1 more prevalent. That both Dode and Yosha are the Branch. And sometimes when you read a prophecy or a statement about the Branch, it applies equally to Dode and Yosha. And sometimes it applies only to Dode, and it almost never applies only to Yosha. Dode is the Branch. But Dode and Yosha share something. And that's common ancestry. They're both sons of Yahweh. They one explained how to become part of the family. The other did what was required for us to become, part of the family. Mm-hmm. Enabled it. But Yahweh doesn't seek credit for himself. And so he's Yosha, of course, was never the our advisor. It's Dode's role. Dode played that role better than any human who ever lived. The only person that comes close to Dode as a person providing thought-provoking information would be Moshe. Dabarim is Moshe's consensus of the Torah. So, I'll go along with you can put him Moshe in that same camp, but Yahweh used Moshe as an implement. He chose him because of his experience in Mitzrayim in Egypt. Mm-hmm. Dode loved. That's not to say that he didn't have affection for Moshe, but it was the Dode relationship is
that was a love affair with Dode.
That's a love affair, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. They were like, this is great. This is most fun I've had with a human being.
It's by far, Yahweh was most fun with any human.
But this is not. I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, I remember a number of years ago when you threw out Yosha is a toenail. And I sat back on my chair and said, toenail clipping. And I was, once I wrapped my head around that, and there's nothing about Yahweh through Yosha who's bragging. He's always pointing to the Father. He's the great one. It's totally inappropriate for him to take this role. It's
correct.
Totally appropriate for Dode to take this role. So when
right.
you came up with this,
doing it.
This totally makes sense to me. I don't have any problem wrapping my head around. I know some people probably will because they still get this hang up with Yosha, being front and center all the time.
This next statement is not appropriate for either man if it's rendered Almighty God. Neither man.
Okay.
You can't call Yosha Almighty God. Diminished manifestation of Yahweh. You can't call Dode Almighty God. What if you translate Gibor and El with realizing that El is possessive of Gibor? What if you translated the powerful, prevailing, confirming, and strengthening of God?
Well, then you got Dode.
Then you got Dode, don't you?
Yeah.
The powerful, totally prevailing, confirming, and strengthening of God. Eternal Father. What did Dode father that is going to endure forever?
His kingdom.
Kingdom of Israel, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He fathered it. He alone fathered it. Yahweh says it's going to endure forever. It is the family of God. And Israel, the kingdom of Dode, which is the family of God, is going to endure forever. Dode is, in fact, the eternal father as it relates to Yahweh's children. They're always called the children of Yisrael, and Yisrael has a father. It's Dode. And Yahweh will end this by saying that Dode's kingdom of Yisrael, will endure forever. the means to empower, the one who acts, delivers, and has the authority to prevail with regard to reconciliation. Well, Yosha fulfilled Pesach and Matzah, and with the set-apart spirit, fulfilled Bukurim, and the set-apart spirit fulfilled Shabuah.
Mm-hmm.
But the means to empower reconciliation comes from the pen of Daud, the lyrics of his psalm. The means to deliver peace and prosperity, satisfaction and favor, friendship and companionship. No one had a better, friendlier, more companion-oriented relationship with Yahweh than Daud. Safety and salvation. Goes on. It becomes even more obvious. I mean, it becomes so obvious that it's like reading on the opposite side, Chabaouk, and seeing Shaul's name there.
Yeah.
So,
pretty cool too.
Hold on, folks. If you're not with me at this point, then I at least want you to be with Yahweh as he continues. Tremendously increasing, abundantly, greatly, and intensively increasing, growing and intensifying an upsurge. Contracted from Lamad, to teach, to learn, to gain information through instruction, and to respond appropriately. So tremendously increasing the power to engage and endure. The means to engage and endure. Right back to that same Misra again. The means to empowerment and liberation. Tremendously increasing the means to engage and endure. So that reconciliation, prosperity, and complete satisfaction are without end and never cease. Yes, I understand that Yosha and the set-apart spirit fulfilled Pesach and Matzah, and Bukurim and Shabuah. And that is extraordinarily important.
Yes.
But God does not tout his own achievements.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What was in your pocket when you began this journey?
91st Psalm.
Uh-huh.
Written by?
Daud.
Daud. I began this journey hand in hand, listening to the lyrics of Daud. That hasn't changed. Tremendously increasing the power to engage and endure, the means to empowerment and liberation. So that reconciliation, boy, Daud ever provide that for me. So that reconciliation, prosperity, and complete satisfaction, the blessings of salvation, favorable circumstances, contentment, tranquility, and peace never cease. Upon the seat of honor of Daud, and with his kingdom established, appointed, fashioned, and formed, authenticated, prepared and steadfast, sustained and supported, renewed and upheld, with the means to exercise good judgment and justly resolve disputes, and with righteousness, being correct and right, from this time and forevermore. Now, if I were in a debate, I would say I rest my case. It's over.
Yeah.
Tremendously increasing the means to engage and endure so that reconciliation is without end upon the throne, the seat of honor of Daud, and with his kingdom established, steadfast, and supported, with the means to exercise good judgment and justly resolve disputes, and with righteousness being correct, right, from this time and forevermore. He just told you, I'm talking about Daud and what I've accomplished through him, what we accomplished together. It's not about Yosha. Pointing us towards the most important person who ever lived. The most brilliant, the most insightful, the most articulate. This is the most important person who ever lived. Daud. And yet, he's just passed by. You know, the Roman Catholic Church sponsored a statue of him where he's not even circumcised. Yeah. And his whole body is out of proportion. Naked. Having a clue what he said or did, or that his life singularly destroys Pauline Christianity. Because Pauline Christianity is based upon the Torah cannot save, because if you violated one aspect of the Torah, you're condemned by it all. That's the foundation of Pauline Christianity. And Dode says that ain't true.
Wouldn't have a chance under that group. No.
Yeah, Dode was not good. Dode was right.
He was right.
Dode.
That's my favorite thing right there. I love that saying.
Yeah,
right there.
That's great. Yeah. Me too.
I don't want to be good. I want to be right.
Oh, absolutely. It's darn near impossible to be good, because, you know, who's to define what's good? But I'll tell you one thing for certain. You can be right, because God tells you what's right. You know, the test is open book.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is it to be right when the test is open book?
Yeah. I may not be able to give you the right answer right off the bat, but give me a few minutes. Give me some time to go look it up. I'll find you the right answer.
I'll find you the answer. He's giving you the answer to every important question. And, you know, realistically, there's only one place where Yahweh tests an individual. It's Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he test Abraham regarding? The terms and conditions of the covenant.
Yeah.
And so all you've got to do is read the answer to that story. That's the only test that Yahweh is ever going to apply. And that's one of the upcoming chapters and observations. We're going to go over the details of that specific test. It's open book.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to it and repeat it. If you say and do what Abraham said and did, you'll pass the test. And then this ends with, the deep passion and devotion of Yahweh, of the spiritual implements, will make this happen. Who did Yahweh love? Who did he call my beloved?
That's what Dode means.
Yeah, and it's the passion of Yahweh that is going to establish the seat of honor of Dode in his kingdom, which is Israel, forever,
mm-hmm.
and his family. All these years, we've gotten it wrong.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about Dode.
I think the only person that could be disturbed by this would be if you still got your foot in the Jesus camp or something like that. I mean, because everything that Yahusha did of importance was done under the inspiration of the Ruach Kodesh.
Right.
So there's no point in Yahweh bragging about that, because that was him, you know, and he just ain't like that.
Plus the fact that every important prophecy regarding Dode,
mm-hmm.
Has wrapped within it a story of Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
These two are linked. They're inseparable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, one is the explanation. The other is the act. The act without the explanation doesn't do you any good.
No.
The explanation without the act doesn't do you any good.
Yeah.
They're both the branch. They come from the same tree.
Same source.
They're reaching out in the same way. They're indistinguishable, except we have verifiable information about Dode. We know everything there is to know about his relationship with Yahweh, his thoughts on the Torah, his participation in the covenant, his role in the establishment of the kingdom of Yisrael, of his building the house, where he lived, how he lived, what he thought, why he was right, why Yahweh came out and said, "This is my son, and I am his father." And he is Sadak. He's right. We know everything we need to know and more about this man. He's brilliant. An extraordinarily effective communicator. He's the gift. I don't know of any more valuable gift. So this does not in any way discount Yahusha. But as you, and we will do this in future events, as we go through Yahusha makes it absolutely unequivocal that Yahusha would not be virgin-born. And it makes it absolutely unequivocal that for most of his life, he was just an ordinary guy. that would all change when the Spirit came upon him. And Yeshaya specifically tells us that the Spirit would come upon him in this way, and that's what would make all the difference. The Spirit also came upon Dode, same way. That's what caused him to be inspired. So it's an entirely different way of looking at things. It's looking at them from the beginning to the end, as opposed to the end to the beginning. You know, I have thought long about the fact that there's only two individuals who tell us anything about that we can trust about what Yosha said and did. And they are Dode in the 22nd and 88th Psalm. And also Yeshaya, particularly in Yeshaya 53 and 54. Those are the two that explained it to us. And that's the only place you're going to find that information, is those two people. And so if you ever wondered why Yahweh didn't arrange for individuals to write down what he said and did in Hebrew and then retain it as he has the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms in a credible way that is that we can understand, then that's the answer. He didn't. Why didn't he do it? Well,
did it.
First, Yahweh was not into bragging.
No.
And he provided an eyewitness account long before it occurred, said he was what he was going to do, then the fact he did what he said, we ought not be focusing on that. We ought to be focusing on what it means. What does
the passion of the Christ, a graphic rendering of what happened, is meaningless if you don't understand why it happened.
Why?
That's
right.
What's important.
Meaningless. Right. Yeah, I mean, matzah without Pesach without matzah is counterproductive. You know, why is it that as he was fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, and Bakura, he only cited one passage?
He tells us what he was supposed to actually have in it.
Right. Psalm 22. It not only explains what's happening, it once
again
tells us where
to go to get the
old
information.
Right. Yeah. United the words of Dode and the words of Yosha. If you want the words of Yosha, if you want the experience of Yosha, read Dode's prophecy in Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Opening line of Psalm 22. It explains precisely what was happening at that moment and what would happen over the next 3 days. And how to capitalize upon it. It describes crucifixion.
In medical terms.
In medical terms, a 1,000 years before it was endured. Yeah, so
before there was crucifixion.
Yeah, 1,000 years before there was crucifixion. Yeah, it's all about what Dode said. Yahweh didn't provide us with a credible eyewitness account in 33 CE because he had provided us with a quality, credible, provable eyewitness account in 1,000 BCE. That's why.
Yeah.
And he wants you to look at what happened through the example and eyes and words of Dode.
Yeah.
Be like him. Be like him. Study the Torah. Revel in the relationship with Yahweh. Become part of the covenant. Proclaim what Yahweh means to you. Be like Dode.
Well, my friend, this is good stuff.
Yeah,
compliments.
Really, and from 9-7 on, we just got through 9-7. From 9-7 on, it 9-8 turns right back to Yisrael, and God says, "I'm going to lay it on the line for you. This is your problem. You are religious. You are political. And as a result, you are, it's just flat out, he says, I and will not save you. I will not spare you. Those who are political, he says, I will not spare those who are political. I will have no mercy for those who are political. I'll show no compassion towards them. And I absolutely will not spare them. And he says, as for those who have been misled by them, you are just hopelessly befuddled. You've ingested their poison. Too bad for you. So it really gets to be, it's the most adroit, uncompromising expose against religion and politics. It puts the Matanyah 23, where he's railing against the religious and political establishment, calling them a brood of vipers, complete hypocrites, puts that to shame. It's not as colorful, but it is far more in your face in the sense of, it just God says, I'm not going to save them, I'm not going to spare them, I don't have any compassion for them. And oh, by the way, you idiots that listen to them, you've ingested their poison, and I have one word for you.
Along with them. Yeah.
My word for you is stupid. They have rendered you incapable of thinking. Sorry. Too bad. So as we go through the rest of this and talk about the continuance of it, it's great stuff. And the other thing that's great stuff is to study the Day of Midian and Gideon and his relationship with Yahweh. And, you know, we haven't yet really gotten into all of the intricacies of the Canaanite Bible. And how it's based on the Christian religion that's being promoted, because we now have access to the entire Canaanite Bible, and there's the religion of Christianity that's presented in it. And then to hear Elijah. And Elijah, I would put Elijah as God's second most favorite person.
Because of his sarcasm, his ability to...
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, yeah, he was just so convinced. Yeah, I just love him. And Yahweh obviously loved him. He just said, okay, you're not going to endure any more of these Nimrods. You've done everything you can do to shake them up. And I appreciate it all. Go. I tell you what, I do have one more job for you. It's not going to occur for another few thousand years. I'm going to let you give him a lip. He's going to be funny. Hell yeah, it's just going to be a hoot when he's one of the two witnesses in Jerusalem during the last 3 years. He is going to be funny. Anyway, he says, I'm going to bring you home. But he loved Elia, no question about it. So, but we've got all of the Elia, and because the Canaanite, if you want to understand the Canaanite religion, as it's expressed in the writings, you've got to turn to the story of Elia, and specifically the great showdown between Yahweh and the Lord. The Lord.
It was 180. I mean,
the Lord did not
prevail. Or something.
Oh no!
Oh, it was the priest of Baal.
Yeah, 850 between the priests of Baal, the prophets of Baal, and the prophets of Astarte, Asherah. They combined both of them, but together. And so
yeah, it was getting long too.
Yeah,
look forward to that
stuff.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah,
it's serious stuff. I mean, but
it is serious stuff because in each of these cases says, the people who deceive you and lead you away from me, who are speaking on behalf of false gods, you should kill them. And when given the chance, Yahweh kills them. So it's amazing stuff. They're deadly. They're poisonous. They're toxic. They're deadly. Anyway, it's great stuff. We'll continue on it. And fortunately, I've got the World Series going in the background. The Dodgers are just getting pummeled. So Hugh Darvish was not worth whatever the Dodgers are paying him, not for in this game. Anyway, it's amazing they haven't pulled him out. But, you know, he's down early, 4-0. And so I will not waste any. My son came over, you know, to pick up my granddaughter, and, you know, I thought they might stay. And that's why I thought we might knock off a little bit early so that I could spend time with my granddaughter and my son and watch the game together. But they went ahead and left. I am going to go down on Sunday. I'm going to fly my son, my eldest son, because he's the Dodger fan. My youngest son is an Angel fan. But I'm going to fly him down to Houston. We have tickets for the game. We're going to actually watch one of the World Series games. So,
enjoy.
Have a great time.
Yeah.
Know where the hot dog stand is on the appropriate time.
Yeah. I'll have a good time, and I will definitely duck out as they play the national anthem. Yeah, you'll see me in the hot dog stand.
In the restroom line.
Yep.
Yeah. Boy.
All right, guys. Well, that's fun stuff.
Okay, buddy. Both of you.
Talk to you next week. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Shalom.